organization. We call the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
When I'm going to the movies, I take up 7 rows because I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on. Really, really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. You know I'm really, really fat. You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. Come on. Really, really you fat. Know. Don't you call me pudgy, portly, or stout, because I tell me once again who's fat.
7 minutes after the hour of 5, from high atop Madison Square Garden, the great studios, nice and warm and toasty, that we are kept by NJDiet.com to do this broadcast to all of you. As you've turned on your terrestrial radio, you've jumped back into your pickup truck or your sedan. If it's a Ford sedan, it may be the last to ever come off an assembly line. Fix or repair daily. Or whether you're listening on streaming audio or you're listening on the app or by whatever means necessary, it's my job to reconnect you if you've been working. Some of you multitasking. To what have been the topics that have been sourced out today. And actually, topic number one has to do with the major medical report that was issued earlier today on behalf of the President of the United States. It was one of the doctors who were assigned to the Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C., Dr. Ronnie Jackson. And it's interesting because the focus was naturally on whether the president is obese or not. This is what Dr. Jackson had to say.
Age 71 years and 7 months at the time of the exam. Height 75 inches. Weight 239 pounds. Resting heart rate 68. Blood pressure 122 over 74. Pulse oximetry 99% on room air. Temperature was 98.4.
Wow. 239. That puts him at his height. Just 1 pound underneath what would have quantified him as being obese, like one-third of the American population. Then Dr. Ronnie Jackson was asked by a reporter at the press conference, how can the president be healthy when he's eating cheeseburgers and downing Diet Cokes?
Explain to me how a guy who eats McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicks and all those Diet Cokes and who never exercises is in as good a shape as you say he's in.
It's called genetics. I don't know. It's some people have, just great genes. You know, I told the president that if he had a healthier diet over the last 20 years, he might live to be 200 years old. I don't know.
Well, apparently the president understood he is going to engage in some form of diet, but when it comes to exercise, it's oofa.
Dr. Jackson, does the president do anything at all right now in terms of exercise? What is his daily exercise routine, if there is one?
So I would say right now on a day-to-day basis, he doesn't have a dedicated, defined exercise program. And that's what I'm working on. The good part is that, we can build on that pretty easily.
Now, part of the medical examination was a cognitive test. No other president had ever been given it. Apparently, Dr. Ronnie Jackson was going to skip it. But then the president, Donald Trump, suggested, no, let's go the whole nine yards. Give me that cognitive test.
I was not going to do a cognitive exam. I had no intention of doing one. The reason that we did the cognitive assessment is plain and simple because the president asked me to do it. He came to me and he said, is there something we can do, a test or some type of screen that we can do to assess my my cognitive ability?
And then like a jack in the box, there he was, Jim Acosta, CNN, in the face of Dr. Ronnie Jackson saying, wait a second, is that cognitive test? Is that like a shrink, a psych test?
Just to make sure we're clear on this, when you analyze his cognitive ability or neurological functions, that is not the same thing as a psychiatric exam or a psychological exam.
It is not. No, it's a screening assessment for cognitive impairment.
Cognitive impairment. Well, to the layman, laywoman, we have absolutely, jack diddly squat, no idea what that cognitive test consists of. So we need some tactical air support and help, and we've reached out again to our very dear friend Mark Siegel, professor of medicine at NYU School of Medicine and contributor as the Fox News medical correspondent. Thanks for jumping on board again, Mark.
Great to be on with you, Curtis.
Okay, so there's a 1 pound differential in the fact that he's about 6'3", the president, weighs in at 239. If he had been 240, he'd been considered obese. Now, is there a possibility, Doc, that the doctor in question, Ronnie Jackson of the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, gave the president the benefit of the doubt, took the pound away so he wouldn't be quantified as being obese?
I wouldn't say that. One of the things that's most disturbing, Curtis, is the way that he's been put under some kind of a microscope. The physician here, who has incredible credentials, was also President Obama's personal physician. And you couldn't find two presidents that are less alike. And also President Bush brought him in. He has massive training in the military. He was in Iraq. He ran a shock trauma unit. He's emergency physician emergency medicine trained. He's a top flight physician. He's overseeing a group of physicians there. And I think he's great. And I don't think he was hedging at all. I think he was trying to tell the truth. And I think he handled the pressure very well. What was most disturbing was the constant repetitive questions.
Well, I got to tell you, I was a lot more concerned when Barack Obama was president, because unlike Donald Trump, who doesn't drink or smoke, we know that for a long period in Barack Obama's life, he was a degenerate cigarette smoker, sometimes two or more packs a day. His own wife, Michelle, wrapped the 24-inch pythons around his neck and said, "I'll squeeze the life out of you if you don't stop smoking." I was concerned that, you know, they could find a spot on his lung and it would be lung cancer.
Well, that's right, and luckily for him, he did cut way down on it, or even stop, and then your long term risk decreases. But your point is right, which is President Trump doesn't smoke, and he doesn't drink, and he never has. And those are two big positives. And I'll add to that a third positive, which is that he's had low blood pressure. And each and every one of these exams we've seen, he's had low blood pressure. So that's the genetic part.
Yeah, but doc, the one thing that the doctor Ronnie Jackson said is he's got to exercise. We know our president likes to play golf. In fact, in his first year in office, he's played more golf than Barack Obama did in his first year of office. Why, instead of taking the golf cart, doesn't the president just walk the 9 or the 18 holes, which would probably suffice for the kind of exercise that he needs?
Well, I've been saying that on TV and in print now for about 2 weeks, ever since this started. I look into the camera and I say, "Walk the course, President Trump." And, you know, I'll tell you, people that have golfed with him have told me that he's a terrific golfer. He beats everybody. He's really good. So that actually implies indirectly some of this fitness that we saw here, that he had no problem with this stress test, that he scored very high on the stress test, which, by the way, shows no active heart disease, even though people are trying to cast aspersions on that today, because his calcium scoring test, which shows that he could have a risk of developing heart disease later on. He could be starting to develop plaques. Well, a lot of us have that, but he doesn't have clinical heart disease, period. He scored very well on the tests that show that. Got to get his cholesterol down. It's too high. He's on the right drug for it. He's going to no doubt have the dose doubled, which is correct. And he needs to exercise and he needs to lose weight. And yeah, eating a more plant-based diet would be helpful. How about a Mediterranean diet?
Ah, interesting, since he likes Europeans so much.
Yeah, exactly. And I happen to, a lot of Italians are living a long time, Curtis. I love the Mediterranean diet.
Oh, yeah, and the French, you would think, oh, my God, all that cheese, all that, the thick sauces, right? You would think the French, their arteries would be choked. No, they actually do quite well. But let me flip the script and go to this cognitive test, which I had never heard about. What exactly is a cognitive test supposed to do? Because apparently no other president has ever taken one.
Well, this particular cognitive test is quite extensive. It's called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. And it looks at reasoning, and it looks at the spatial conception, and it looks at the ability to problem solve, and it looks at judgment and decision making. So it's a very, very extensive test. And I'm not sure I could get 30 out of 30. I mean, he got 30 out of 30 at the age of 71, which flat out rules anything to do with dementia coming on. This is what's known as a pre-dementia tool. Mm. And it shows very clear thinking. Now, the point that was brought up there that is correct, which is it doesn't test psychiatric issues. It won't tell you generally if you have a psychiatric problem unless it impairs your ability to think or to reason, which sometimes does, or memory, right? But here's the thing that does rule that out that I thought was extraordinary that the media was trying to dismiss, Curtis, which is The president's doctor said, I see the man every day. We interact every day. We have great interactions, very astute, very sharp. He's very sharp. And I saw no evidence, he said, of any kind of behavioral or psychiatric issue. That's better than any psychiatric test they have, because you start doing an MMPI, which is a personality indicator. That's like 30% accurate.
But, Doc, Mark Siegel, part of that Montreal cognitive test is it measures the repetitive times you use certain words or phrases. Our president has become a master of it. Almost every second press conference, no collusion with Russia, no collusion with Russia, fake news, fake news, fake news. Man, he aces that test because of the repetitive nature of what he does.
Yeah, and we all know that that's deliberate, that he's doing that for emphasis. You know, that's where his reality TV background comes in. He's doing that to make a point, to battle the media, to battle the opposition that's not giving him a fair shake. So, again, this was reassuring, but it shouldn't have been necessary. And then once he takes it, you know, voluntarily, it's very disturbing that people are not wanting to accept it.
Now, does the president have attention deficit disorder? Because he does seem like his attention span at times can be very limited.
That Montreal test tests that, and it showed no evidence of it.
But one thing real quick. I've been to Montreal. You try speaking English in Montreal. If you're not a Quebecois, you don't speak French, you don't read French, you're lost there. Are you sure this was done in English and not French?
Well, I think maybe it was translated from the original, but by the time it got down to President Trump, it was in English. I'm positive that he took it in English, Curtis, but... You know, and I'm all, again, no attention deficit, no problem with judgment, no problem with reasoning, no problem with spatial ability. I'm all left brain. The president apparently has a very big right brain as well.
Well, we've seen that. He used to have a big left brain when he was a liberal progressive as a citizen. Now he's got a big right brain as he has become the leader of the Republican conservative movement in the United States.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
Well, now it's all going to pot. Well, whether we like it or not, the best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're sure going to miss it a lot. All of the whiskey in Lynchburg,
Tennessee. Let me tell you something. Willie Nelson, America's biggest pothead. He's a weed freak, there's no doubt. He's had to cancel some of his recent concert arrangements because I think he's got pneumonia. I'm not quite sure. We know he hasn't OD'd on pot because he's not taking injections of Narcan nasal spray, you know, that you take if you've had a overdose reaction to an opioid, heroin, or fentanyl. Yeah, well, what do you do? You eat yourself to death because you have the munchies? But I played that song by Willie Nelson. Because now that Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, is attempting to steal another 4 years of the governorship, that would mean his father, Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, had 12 years. Oh, my God. And Andrew wants 12 years. That would mean we've been cursed for 24 years if he gets reelected. And the polls right now say he's going to crush his competition. There were a few guys who have announced. We interviewed Joel Giambra the other day, Republican, seeking Republican line, also the Reform Party line, and I'm the chairman of in New York State. There's Kolb, who is the minority leader in the Assembly of the Republicans. I'll be meeting with him tomorrow. He's seeking the Reform Party line, but he wants the Republican line. There's Bill Samuels. He's not sure if he's going to run yet. He's a Democrat liberal, and there are some others. But right now, the polls say if the election were tomorrow, Andrew Cuomo unfortunately crushes the competition. But Andrew knows he's vulnerable on the issue of the recreational use of marijuana. He's opposed to it. Poll after poll indicates that 60% of registered New York voters are now for it. And most of those are millennials and hipsters who, if you visit any of their neighborhoods, you see the vape shops. You see all the paraphernalia shops, and let me tell you something. That's not for the tobacco products they're inhaling. That's for the smoke they're taking in their lungs, in which they're going puff, puff, pass. So that's just the reality. And in fact, the other day when I was interviewing gubernatorial candidate Joel Giambra, he said a main plank of his platform is the legalization of the recreational use of marijuana in New York State.
It's time for New York State to step up and say we need to take the black market economy and cultivate an entrepreneurial economy. Marijuana and cannabis has become an industry. We know firsthand, and science now has proven, that marijuana is a very effective for medicinal purposes. And, you know, it's now time to think about the bigger public policy and ending prohibition.
And all Andrew evilized Cuomo. King Cuomo II is thinking about his reelection. And he wants to take out all potential impediments, even if it means he's got to use technology. So he announced that he is appointing, get this, a blue ribbon panel to investigate the pros and cons of the recreational use and legalization of marijuana in New York State. Presently, we have medical marijuana, but good luck trying to find it. They keep it out of sight, out of mind. Andrew Cuomo is concerned that if you smoke it as a product, you'll damage your lungs, so he won't permit you to smoke it. You can take it in its edible forms, its oil forms, its gummy bear forms, its other forms. But again, knock yourself out trying to find it or find a doctor who's going to give you a prescription or script to it. But put that aside. And then a lot of people are saying, well, that's very open-minded. That's very libertarian of Andrew Evilized Cuomo. Hey, he's done this before to us. Remember fracking? He didn't want to make a decision on fracking, remember, which was a salvation economically to that part of Pennsylvania that's along our southern border of New York State. So what he said is, we'll put together a blue ribbon panel and we'll investigate it. And I read, he investigated it and investigated it and kept kicking the can down the street until all of a sudden he had survived re-election the last time. And then all of a sudden he said, no fracking. You see, this is the Cuomo way. And if you don't remember that Blue Ribbon Commission that was a fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi rubber stamp for him, you do remember the Moreland Commission. The United States Supreme Court has just cleared the way for the retrial of the Meyer Lansky, the Hyman Roth of New York State Democratic politics, the guy who used to be the most powerful Democrat, more powerful than Andrew Evilized Cuomo when he was governor. You know what I'm talking about, the Assembly Leader, Shelley Silver. He was found guilty and then given a reprieve. He'll go on retrial. And the interesting thing here is that, remember, the Moreland Commission was designed by Cuomo to bust up the corruption in Albany on both sides of the aisle. But when all of a sudden the progressive breadcrumbs were leading to the governor's office, particularly to his leg breaker, his main consigliere, and the person who knows where all the Cuomo bones are buried and who buried him, Joe Pococo, who's going on federal trial in about 10 days on corruption, shakedowns, and extortions that he committed in upstate New York as part of the Buffalo Billions, then all of a sudden Cuomo ended the Moreland Commission. So you see, he starts these blue ribbon panels to give him distance, and then he walks away from them. He has no intention of legalizing recreational marijuana. Just as he had no intention of legalizing fracking in New York State, just like he never had intention to give a colonic to both sides of the aisle, a political colonic, to the corruption that he has actually encouraged in New York to make it the most corrupt state in America.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
I know that you, Ryan Mondaluch, and Justin B. Love have a popcorn party when Parks and Recreation were at their height on TV, and you couldn't get enough. And the guy who really busted out on that show was Ozzie Ansari. More importantly, he now has his own show, Master of None, and after the latest allegation, he may have none. But he recently did a one-man show in MSG and packed a house. So his career was skyrocketing. Then all of a sudden, some woman comes forward after looking him at the Golden Globes Award, receiving an award with a Me Too button. You know, one of those Me Too buttons say, you fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi. You violated me. And then she gets out the message that she had had a date with Ozzy. He had invited her back to his apartment here in Lower Manhattan. And then he was like, an octopus on her. And I'm not quite sure if it was wanted, unwanted. That's a little cloudy and murky. But apparently she complained the very next day The Ozman texted it back. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was such a lech. I was such an octopus. And now it's taken on a life of its own. On the line to discuss it, Carol Markowitz, columnist for the New York Post. And Carol, first off, thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5 again. And what's your take on all of this?
Thanks so much for having me, Curtis. My take is that the accusations against Aziz Ansari pretty much put a nail in the coffin of the Me Too movement. And the reason I think that is this accusation just doesn't fit with the other ones, and yet it's reported out as if it belongs among these accusations. And there's been a concern for a long time that the movement was moving towards being a witch hunt. And here we have a very clear example that that's exactly where it's gone.
Now, if all of a sudden another shoe were to drop, another woman were to emerge, and a third and a fourth telling a somewhat similar story or a little bit different story, would that change your mind?
It wouldn't, because I'm actually waiting for more women to come forward and say that Aziz Ansari has no game. He's got no technique. He has no idea what he's doing with women, because that's what the story was. The story was he did not know how to approach this woman, and he kept going after her, but being very aggressive about it, and sort of being aggressive and then, you know, heading backwards a little bit and, you know, taking it easy, cuddling with her, watching the TV, and then just starting up all over again. So his big issue is he just didn't know what to do. And I am convinced there's going to be more women coming forward, talking about Aziz Ansari's sexual technique, and that's really too bad for him, because I don't think he deserves it.
Well, Carol, he hasn't negated what this woman has said, so I think we can agree he lacks savoir-faire, and he's not a smooth operator.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And I think the fact that he considers himself a supporter of the Me Too movement is sort of ironic here, because he doesn't seem to realize he's no longer in that movement. They are on the opposite side from him now, and they're coming for him. And there's been some pushback. I'm not the only person who wrote about the fact that this accusation really doesn't fit into the movement. But he's being mentioned in the same breath as, like, Matt Lauer or Harvey Weinstein, and he's really tainted by association because of this movement. And whether or not his career survives really is up in the air. You know, I'd bet on Bitcoin right now before I bet on his career. So we'll see.
But isn't it more to the fact that both he, the new Jack, and the old school actor Michael Douglas all of a sudden had accusations emerge because people watching at home, them on TV, saw those Me Too buttons and said, "You SOB, how dare you suddenly suggest you're in solidarity with a movement about female victims when I know you victimized me?" And that has really caused these women to come forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely that woman who came forward, her, you know, they call her Grace. She saw Aziz Ansari being a hypocrite. Although, again, the fact that the reason that the movement is so misguided, in my opinion, is because someone like Aziz Ansari can be caught up in it. I think he thinks he's a supporter of women, and he would be, I'm sure right now is shocked that he's included in the people who assaulted or harassed or pressured women, where he feels this was just a bad date or an interaction gone wrong, where he, according to her own words, really didn't do anything wrong. She could have left at any time. She was absolutely not pressured to stay. He didn't threaten violence or anything of the sort. She just was enamored by him or his celebrity status and hung around and kept letting him try his awkward seduction.
But Carol, they now have manuals at some universities and colleges that describe to both the men and women, if they are together and they decide to get physical, there are like steps every step of the way. It's like looking at a traffic light. You indicate green, yellow, or red. If the woman says red, then you don't go any further. Yellow, it's almost like open to negotiation. Green, you're in like Flynn. You might as well round the bases. First, second, third, and slide into home.
You know, putting aside that that sounds like the lamest sex ever, I think the problem here is he did have consent. He just didn't have enthusiastic consent. So now it doesn't even matter if it's red, green, yellow. You have to be enthusiastic about the green. You have to really go for the green. You have to show that you're full steam ahead, and Otherwise, he should be stopping on his own, which I don't know in the history of humanity when men
does he get props because he actually looks like a newbie? He looks ungainly. He doesn't look like Franco, the actor, right? You know, like he's suave. So do you think people will sort of say, you know, first time out, the guy just hit a few road bumps?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to Ansari, because I think he's the test case. He's the, are we going to ruin this guy's career because a woman didn't have a good time with him one night? Or are we going to save that for the Harvey Weinsteins and, you know, the Matt Lauers and all the rest who committed egregious offenses against women? And are we going to continue with this Me Too movement where, it, you know, it's barely, we're barely catching our breath with these accusations? They're not being reported out in a very sophisticated way anymore. At the beginning, they were. The Harvey Weinstein reporting was amazing.
Well, and Carol, if it does go south for him, he could always become the Southeast Indian version of Andrew Dice Clay, right? Never seemed to hurt him.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man with people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys.
As we continue here in the Drive Home at 5. And these bad boys are called the Albanian bad boys. They're known as head shooters. Vicious, violent. They bring those ways from their country of origin, and they've adopted to the ways of Albanian organized crime. First, they did it up in the Bronx, set up in Morris Park and along Arthur Avenue in the Belmont section of the Bronx, basically bullying the Genovese crime family. Then they took it from there up into Westchester County, took over Port Chester and Mount Vernon from the Gambinos and the Genovese. Then they expanded their operation into Astoria, Queens, where the Lucchese's had run gambling operations and the Albanian bad boys had run them out. So the heads of the major organized crime groups, especially the Colombos, the Lucchese's, the Bananos, and the Genovese, they appealed to the Gambino crime family. This is back in about 2002. At that point, John Gotti Sr. in jail, Marion Correctional Facility, doing triple life without parole. His son, John Gotti Jr., he was upstate doing time in that Scores shakedown. And even Peter Gotti, brother of John Gotti Sr., he was doing time. So it was Arnold Zeke Squitieri who was the underboss and took control of the Gambino crime family with the blessings of the Gottis. But he was from Englewood Cliffs, in New Jersey. He said, I'm going to get tough with these Albanian bad boys. I'm going to schedule a meeting with them. In fact, you tell the leader of the Albanian bad boys he's to meet me at that gas station right at the start of the Palisades Parkway when you get off the George Washington Bridge in the shadow of Fort Lee. And they met. And immediately, Arnold Zeke Squitieri and his Gambino guys got out. And they pulled guns on the Albanians and told them, that's it. They're not encroaching on anybody's organized crime operation in the five boroughs or beyond. Well, the Albanians, they went one better. They pulled out sort of shotguns. They pointed it at the gas pumps and threatened to blow everybody to kingdom come. That would have meant Arnold Zeke Squitieri, the Gambinos, all the Albanian bad boys, and everyone else who was frequenting that gas station. At that point, Arnold Zeke Squitieri folded like a cheap camera, and bowed out. And this was a sign of the declining power of the Gambinos and the rise and the ascension of the Albanian bad boys. And look at today's headlines, right out of federal court, Eastern District, Brooklyn. 11 Albanian bad boys taken out in chains and shackles as they walk the daisy chain, the perp walk, because they were busted for importing fentanyl from where? Red China. That's right. President Hu, what's on second? I don't know who's on third. You swore to our President Trump that you weren't manufacturing and distributing fentanyl. You lied, like Red Chinese lie so often. You bury it in the bowels of those ships, those container ships that come across the Pacific and then into the Atlantic. And then all of a sudden, they'll come into the Straits of the Verrazano through the Arthur Kill, the Kill Van Cult, to the port of Newark Elizabeth. They'll empty their cargo, and with it, the poison of fentanyl, which is killing so many folks in the tri-state area in America now. But the Albanian bad boys, they're getting locked up for the sale of fentanyl and heroin in the streets. Now, you chop off the heads of these Albanian bad boy leaders and they just regenerate. Because there are so many others who have come forward in a new generation of head shooters. So, ladies and gentlemen, this just shows you the power of the Albanian bad boys. And what they got to do is lock them up, throw away the key, not deport them. Make them do a hard time because they're killing Americans by bringing red Chinese fentanyl to our shores.